you're trying to change weight before I come for you? Don't go anywhere, I am coming. I smash you and Burns in 2 minutes, believe me. I'm the king here. And with that, welcome to Early Stoppage, the show where the news of the day is usually given just enough time, but sometimes not enough. This is your first time stopping by. We thank you. And get ready for something you won't find anywhere else. I'm John Franklin, and I'm joined by the God, Father of Fight Night Picks, Craig Allen. Craig, how are you?
John, I'm well. Listen, I'm rocking the Montreal Canadiens jersey tonight. Thursday, we're taping this. They lost. They were down 4-1 early on in the game. They lost 5-4. They don't even have 10 wins this year. The hometown guy, Jake Allen, is hurt. But all this to say, John, it's cold AF up here. It's like it was minus 30 today, which is really, really cold. Because what is it? Minus 30 and minus 32 even out Fahrenheit and Celsius, right? So that's how cold it was up here. And I figured I'm going to wear the Canadiens uni. I'm going to rock the turtleneck and I'm going to do my best Thomas Plekanec. So big time Plekanec fan when I was a kid. He still plays pro hockey over in Czech, which is pretty cool. But I was feeling it. It's really cold up here, though.
This is what we're doing here in Phoenix today. 55 tomorrow. I could probably do this a lot better. Tomorrow we got what? 70, 71, 68, 69. Listen, Phoenix is the West Coast American headquarters of Fight Night Picks. Maybe someday it'll be the outright headquarters of Fight Night Picks. We'll see. On this episode of Early Stoppage, we talk Ngannou's mentions, Jake Paul's stakes and riding off into the sunset. But we begin, Craig, with the aforementioned Francis Ngannou. Francis Ngannou bet on himself, which is the only bet you should ever make, and won. Dana was a no-show. Tyson Fury was in the DMs, or at the very least, the mentions. So, Craig, I ask you, despite all the obstacles, despite all the issues, despite very little support from the promotion, Ngannou did the damn thing. So what's next for the Predator?
Well, I think, I mean, listen, sometimes after a big-time co-main event, you're trying to book the fourth fight, you get kind of pulled backstage for an hour, and then you can't make it to the belt presentation, and then the next day, you know, you don't really put anything on Instagram, and the promotion doesn't put out any highlights during the main event.
He's a busy guy.
Well, that's it. You're a busy guy. I mean, and now we find ourselves here. So Dana White's kind of, he had a Q&A, and then he did some interviews after the fact. And it seems like, from everything that he said, you know, yeah, there were a few things behind closed doors, but he seems committed to keeping Francis Ngannou where he's at. Now, all the way into the lead into that fight, it was fight or pay. It was, you know, Francis has to have the opportunity to be able to box, and so on and so forth. I think the UFC might have to bend to some of those concessions. I mean, if you're Tyson Fury, you're probably laughing right now. You look at that fight that Ngannou had against Ciryl Gane, and you go, man, this guy's your best striker. And in an opportunity to put a stamp on, you know, not just the fact that he's able to make his first retention of the belt, but to make a stamp on a boxing career, to make a stamp on, you know, a big pay-per-view week that really wasn't that big of a pay-per-view week, if you really think about it. But he went out there and wrestled. So for Tyson Fury, the weird thing is, I mean, even in the boxing community, John, I don't know if you've been following along. You get the Mike Tyson shirt on right now.
I do.
Does Tyson Fury really have a fight bout signed right now? Is it Usyk? Is it Joshua? Who's it going to be in a fight? Is it Dillian White, which it appears that it's going to be a Dillian White fight, and Joshua kind of has to hang around in the fray, and they rematch him with Usyk. All that to say, Tyson Fury doesn't officially have a fight signed right now. What if Francis Ngannou stepped in there and fought him? The only caveat to that is, what is it, a 9-month recovery on the knee injuries for Ngannou? So to really answer the question, what's next for the Predator? He goes under the knife. Hopefully it doesn't end up like another Greg Oden, and we get a big-time fight out of him.
Well, here's where I think Francis Ngannou should tread very lightly. Because I think that, you know, the guys that you mentioned that could be potential opponents for Tyson Fury, really only Anthony Joshua. I mean, the Usyk fight would be a big fight and a good fight, but I don't know in terms of like we talk about poster fights. I don't know that the Usyk fight would draw the kind of eyes the Joshua fight would draw. So let's say the Joshua Fury fight.
You get me.
You do get you. Let's say the Joshua Fury fight is one thing, right? And it's, that's in the stratosphere. But Usyk, White, and Ngannou may all draw the same numbers. You're coming to that fight to see Tyson Fury. Here's the thing you got to be careful with if you're Francis Ngannou. You're looking at this like, I'm going to cash in on the fact that I can now negotiate myself into the boxing world. My man, if you're going to negotiate yourself into a boxing fight, it ain't with that guy. Okay, that guy is the best. Right now, maybe one of the best of all time. You take Tyson Fury's prime and put it against everybody's prime, okay? Tyson Fury on his best night is a big problem for Lennox Lewis, is a big problem for Mike Tyson, is a big problem for Muhammad Ali. I'll say it. He's a big problem for everybody because he's a talented big man, okay? Lennox Lewis was a talented big man. He doesn't move like Tyson Fury moves, okay? Tyson Fury fights like a middleweight.
Don't disrespect my Canadian like that.
I'm not trying to disrespect him. I'm just trying to explain that Ngannou is getting himself in a situation that I don't think that he's quite ready for. So let's start there. But here's the other thing. You're a Canadian. Let's talk about the Montreal screw job. Why did Bret Hart get screwed by the WWE? Please tell me.
You know, it's kind of sad because I have a Montreal screw job t-shirt. Instead of the toilet seat on the front, it actually has a screw. But come on, I was what, like 3 when that happened?
I'll tell you why. You don't have to know. I'll tell you why. Because Bret Hart was not going to sign with the WWE. He was moving on. And the oldest rule in the fight game, whether it be wrestling or anything, you don't let a guy show up on another promotion's airwaves with your belt. You don't do it. Bret couldn't go to WCW holding that WWE belt, so they had to take it from him. He knew that. He should have known it was coming. Okay, here it goes. I think the UFC will re-sign Francis Ngannou as well for that reason. I think they'll give him the boxing carrot that he wants. It'll be with a ton of provisions, probably one of them being that you cannot fight Tyson Fury because he's going to make you look bad, which makes our promotion look bad. But they'll let him get in there with somebody. I just think that he needs to understand you can't walk away with that belt. You just can't.
And that.
But he probably made himself a lot of money.
Well, that topic, it kind of trickles down throughout the whole episode. So the next one that we have, John, I mean, Dana didn't put the belt on Francis. We know this, but he did pop up later on for the culture. Listen, he was on Complex, John. Do you think he picked up any Fight Night picks, Jordan ones? Do you think he got himself some of those? You think he's all about that life? No, there's a Canadian flag on there. Patriotic.
Hey, speaking of Jordan 1s, did you see those shoes that Brendan Schaub gave Sean O'Malley?
Yeah, the Jay Balvins. Yeah.
Dude, I'm not a sneakerhead. Those were serious.
And Brendan Schaub
takes a lot of shit from the two of us. That's smart giving your guests shoes like that.
But anyway. Do you have to get your guests if you spend $500-$600 on shoes? Regardless. Dana White was on Complex. And listen, in the time between the no-show for the belt presentation, the Complex video that came out, Jake Paul tweeted out, and I quote, "I've invested in EDR, in brackets UFC stock, with my partner Jeffrey Wu to focus on UFC's ESG standards relating to fighters. We believe EDR can drive long-term economic value by increasing UFC fighter pay and providing them healthcare. Reaching out to @engine1 to partner on this endeavor." And listen, even today, Jake Paul was out there doing an interview with ESPN advocating for a fighter union. So, John, is Jake Paul making enough noise on his own to make a change in the sport? Or is it going to take some more big stars like a Francis Ngannou already has to make a big difference? And my other kind of thing in this too, why haven't we really heard about these guys advocating for other MMA leagues? Why is it just everybody against the UFC?
Well, the UFC is the biggest show in town, so I mean, of course you're going to go after them. But I will say this. I don't think that Jake Paul is prepared to make a commitment to the level that he would have to make it to really enact change. Like, you have to really have leverage. He has leverage in the sense that, like, he would have to start a competing promotion. The UFC is way too smart contractually to let their relevant fighters fight for Jake Paul or with Jake Paul or against Jake Paul. So it's tricky. I think that the only way, and I've said this 1,000 times, I'll say it 1,000 more, The only way that there is ever going to be really huge change is a union amongst the champions. If the champions got together and they said, tonight we're not fighting, and they waited and they made it, that's what you got to do. I mean, all things, listen, I'm a teacher. We're going through a thing right now in Phoenix where, you know, they could be closing schools. It's a weird law. It's a conversation for another day. But to get the things that we need, we've talked about walking out or maybe striking. I'm part of a union. So that's sometimes what you have to do. So I think that that's the, I don't think Jake Paul is the answer here. I think that Jake Paul is a 1,000-level troll, and he's finding every little way that he can get under Dana White's skin.
The craziest thing is, if you're the UFC, and they kind of talked about it last year, hinted at it, you know, we're going to have our fight night cards at the Apex. It just works out better that way. And they can charge those premium prices for those tickets that are there, but you're never going to make the gate that you could be making in, like, Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, or, like, Boston, where they like to have fight nights but not pay-per-views. But when I do look at that card, I'm halfway surprised they even decided to have a pay-per-view in California. You have to know that those fighter pay numbers are going to go public when you have a commission like that. And then, I don't know, John, if you have the numbers up in front of you, but, like, I look at this. Jasmine Jazz DeVicius, 10 to show, 10 to win, and she wins. What, like, okay, so she makes that. Silvana Gomez-Juarez, 12 grand to show. Vanessa Demopoulos, 12 and 12. Like, she was a big time player over with Invicta. She had the fight on Contender Series. Renato Valdez gets his brain bashed in the first round against Patrick White, almost finished on Contender Series, ends up finishing him in the second round, goes out there against Matt Frivola, gets knocked down 4 or 5 times, depending on what you score a knockdown. 10 grand to show. And then the worst one is, and Michael Morales, 10 and 10. Jack Della Maddalena, who I think is a super prospect, 10 and 10. Pete Rodriguez, 12 grand. Pete Rodriguez is 4-0 and made 12 grand. Jack Della Maddalena, 10 to show. You're making less money to show than a guy who's 4-0. The worst one is Andrea Fialho, a guy who fought with PFL against Chris Curtis, fought with Bellator in big fights, fought with UAE Warriors, signs to the UFC on short notice. He's a dominance MMA guy. So listen, do I blame his management? Kind of. I mean, Ali probably could have got him a better deal. You're the fight before two title fights. You can make an argument Fialho beat Michelle Pereira, who made 50 and 50. Andre Fialho made 12 grand. Like, 12 grand to fight a guy that's almost in the rankings on the main card of a pay-per-view. Like, it's despicable. It looks terrible. It's a huge black eye. So couple that with Jake Paul, with Francis Ngannou trying to advocate for fighter pay. I think this conversation is just going to continue. And as soon as they have a card that's not in a state where they publish these numbers, people are going to keep talking. I don't think the conversation is going to stop when you just go back to Vegas for your next card.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, it's all labor, right? So the question becomes, do you have, like, some sort of a salary schedule, which means, like, all champions get paid a certain thing? And, well, then that takes away the negotiation, takes away the fact that Sean O'Malley is different than a guy with his same record and his same ranking. And, you know, you want to leave it open. You want it to be a free market so these guys can negotiate the contracts that they feel they're worth. But then that leaves out the guy who's just, you know, not charismatic, but a good fighter.
That's it. There, I just have two really quick, you know, two sides to every coin, you know, with regards to this. Okay, so you can say, yeah, Jack Della Maddalena, 10 and 10. It's not great, but if he continues to fight, and if he's as good as you think he is, he's probably going to have a big payday longer down the road, so on and so forth. Yeah, you're not wrong. He's a UFC fighter for life, same as Pete Rodriguez. I don't think Pete Rodriguez is going to have the wildest career in the UFC, but he can always say, hey, I fought in the UFC. It was the biggest promotion. That's cool. That's great. The other thing about this, John, that I don't think a lot of people think about, you make 10 grand in that fight, let's say. Then you have to pay your manager a percentage. Then you have to pay your gym a percentage. Then you have to fly out your corners. You have to pay your nutritionist. And a lot of people here, it's almost like the CFL. A lot of these lower-end fighters, CFL doesn't pay great, but the guys that play in the CFL do it for the love of the game. And some of them, only the elite, might get a shot at being what? Like a practice squad guy in the NFL? Really? Like, you're not going to have giant NFL success if you play in CFL. But they have to work other jobs. Like, a lot of guys. Like, you think about a lineman. A lineman in the CFL, you're going to be a real estate agent in the winter. You're going to do other things. So, you got to really think about that when you're talking about this fight or pay thing. Yeah, it says 10 grand and that's terrible, but then take the deductions out of it. What are you going to get? 6 grand, 5 grand? And then there's taxes too.
We need to move on, but you know, when the UFC has a performance institute, that's where they tell you enough with the boohoo and you want to train here. You want to live here. I guarantee you that if a fighter trains at the UFC PI, I would almost guarantee you the UFC will fly them to where they need to go, would be my guess, with all their other staff and all their other whatever. So that's why these things exist. And if you want to train in at Fortis or you want to train at Jackson's or you want to train at, ATT, that's how it goes. So, all right, let me move on, Craig. PFL is inked a new ESPN deal. According to the organization, the new deal includes expanded media rights with the entirety of the PFL's 2022 playoffs, as well as the majority of regular season events to simulcast on ESPN and ESPN Plus. Craig, please tell me this is going to lead to the thing that has been my dream forever, that the PFL becomes a feeder league for the UFC and you win the million and you get a contract with the... I'm just kidding. Here's the question. Why do you think ESPN has made this move? Do you think they're sending a message to the UFC? And also, do you think that if the UFC is on in a bar and the PFL is fighting or the UFC is fighting, most people know or care the difference? Or do you think the ESPN is just like, we just want MMA. And if the UFC doesn't keep their nose clean and if we can build PFL as a brand, why? Why do you think they re-signed PFL?
It's kind of funny because, like, up here, especially in Fredericton, like, you're not going to find a bar that shows UFC, really. I mean, Boston Pizza used to, but I don't even know if they still do. I think Dooley's had some of the pay-per-views, but I don't know if there's a cover to go to Dooley's to shoot pool and watch a pay-per-view. The one thing I will say, John, is I feel like since I've been subscribed to PFL emails, holy sweet fuck, have I gotten a lot of PFL emails this week. So I'm going to go through them. This is riveting. But this is where I'm going to make my point. I got an email today. Professional Fighters League Challenger Series. Featherweights compete on Fubo Sports Network March 11th. Tuesday, what is it? PFL Challenger Series Women's Lightweights compete on Fubo Sports Network March 4th. PFL Fighters League reaches multi-year renewal with ESPN for expanded media rights. Monday, Professional Fighters League Challenger Series matchup set for February 18th and 25th. They're making a big push on other networks for their own feeder league because the Challenger Series, they're going to different countries. They're bringing in the best fighters they can find, and then they sign them to a deal, and they bring them into the PFL, and then all of a sudden, Jeremy Stevens is in the mix. But all this to say, their ratings must have been good enough with ESPN. They must realize that the company has enough financial backing that they're not just going to shut down halfway through the season. Like, this isn't the XFL 2.0. So there's got to be enough in the mix that there's a good enough relationship with the top brass of the PFL, which you and I both agree. We've talked about this before. They've invested in a good core of business-minded people to run this organization. But the real key is going to be, can they translate that into more views? And like you said, can they reach a point where they're on ESPN, they're at B-dub-dubs with Davidson Baker, and they're able to make enough of an impact where somebody goes, geez, I like those fights. I might watch that again. Because I've told this story before. I look at it every day when I sit here in my office. I get that PFL poster up in the corner. Now, a little bit of it is a reminder because I was in Halifax. My dad was also in Halifax. And I went up to his room at the hotel, and we both watched the PFL championships. And he loved it. They might have converted a guy who rarely follows MMA into a PFL fan. So I think you're right. I think it's a big move for the company to continue on with them. From ESPN, though, I feel like it's kind of like a lukewarm one. Like, yeah, multi-year deal. We'll see how this one goes.
Yeah, I think if ESPN was smart, and they are, I think that I would have a partnership with the UFC where I stay out of their way, but I gain a lot of knowledge in the MMA business. I have my executives going to fights and talking to Dana and sort of like, you know, just kind of getting all the information they can from him. And I'm putting that into the PFL so that if someday Dana decides, it's back to Fox for us, or it's Amazon, or it's Netflix, or whoever's next, who the hell knows, Paramount Plus, whatever Dana decides to do next, the ESPN could say, okay, that's fine. We now have an infrastructure that we've built with the PFL. We feel comfortable that, you know, I think it's Peter Murray for the PFL, is that his name, says we're number two organization. I don't know if I agree with that, but I mean, if you talk about positioning, you talk about partnerships. I mean, he's doing well for himself. So I think that roster wise, they're not number two. Money wise, they're not number two. Desire for fighters to go there, they're not number two. But I think that, you know, I think that ESPN needs to use the UFC relationship to build the PFL would be my advice.
And I'm going to highlight this before we move on. I mean, it says it right at the start of the email. 7 PFL events to feature on ESPN and simulcast on ESPN Plus with additional broadcasts on ESPN2. That's huge. Because last year they were mostly on ESPN2. Were they not? I'm not an American, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so I mean, that really is huge for them. I'm really excited about it. I do like the PFL product. So we move on, John. We talk about a product that I do want. Deiveson Figueiredo wants to fight Brandon Moreno in Mexico City, or so it seems. Brazilians themselves, they're eager for the next UFC event, but they're going to have to wait a little bit because all of a sudden, May 7th, UFC 274, which was going to have Teixeira, Prochazka in the main event, still will, and Charles Oliveira taking on Justin Gaethje, they moved that to the States. So my big question is, John, do you figure we're going to have a bigger international return in 2022, which 2021 you didn't have anything? You already have an event booked for London. Do you think we're going to see more UFC kind of pushing the borders, maybe coming up north? Or will it just be a couple of events and no return to Brazil?
You know, I think that everything is trending that way. With that being said, I mean, I don't know globally how, like, you know, Delta variant or Omicron variant are affecting the rest of the world. I don't know how they're affecting the United States. For the United States, we had a lot more people, myself included, getting COVID, but being okay. Like, I'm vaccinated. I was sick for a couple of days. I'm fine now. I'm negative now. So, but it seemed like the Omicron variant spread faster. It didn't mesh up as bad as all the other variants did, but it was spread easier. Well, either that, or everybody got real lax with their mask wearing, this kid included, and that led to it. I don't know. So I think that depending on how these variants make their way globally through the areas, that's going to be the big thing. I mean, I think Dana would want to go. I think everybody's comfortable with it. Obviously, we're having more events. I'm going to a Suns game on Sunday. Took my son to a Suns game in November. We were fine. We were masked up. We're vaccinated.
Is Fedor going to be there this time?
I don't think so. Not this time. I don't even know who they're playing Sunday. Anyway, because we have tickets. We got them, like, we want them or something. So I don't even know who they're playing. But anyway, I think that it depends on how these variants affect globally. But I think the UFC is ready to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to see a little bit more. So on Sunday, January 30th, you're playing the Spurs, not your Tim Duncan Spurs anymore.
No, not your father's Spurs.
Not even your DeMar DeRozan Spurs. But I do think we're going to see a little bit of a return. I mean, it seems like, you know, as things normalize, as they say, like, you're going to see more and more jurisdictions open up. But it all depends on the individual spots. I mean, if you wanted to have an MMA event here in New Brunswick, like, today, not a chance. But it looks like even next week, I think, because that was a conversation, that we might be able to play hockey again. And I haven't played hockey since, like, start of December, the end of November. So I'm eager for that. And by proxy, I'm eager for more MMA events. So hopefully you're able to see a bit of a return there with the UFC and maybe even a card in Brazil or a card in Mexico. I think it'd be exciting. You know, it would definitely kind of be, what would you say? Like, it's kind of like a pat on the back to the fans that have stuck around.
I will say this. I put some things together to try to cover international, my first ever international card. Like, I set some money aside to maybe travel. And I was hoping to go to Brazil because I thought there was going to be a card in May. Now, listen, I got a lot of things going on in June, July. I mean, it probably wasn't going to happen either way, but I'm at least prepared financially to make it happen. I think that it would suck. I mean, it's better for me if it waits, but I was kind of like, let's make May happen. You know, I was excited. Anyway, and we move on. Craig, they say fighters don't retire. The ring retires them. Now, I'm not here to say that Ryan Bader and Benson Henderson are running out of opportunities to ride off into the sunset or that they're washed. But their fight this weekend is in their hometown of Phoenix against two lesser-known fighters. If you are Bader and Hendo and you win, should they take this opportunity to go out on top?
I mean, for Ryan Bader, like, he's kind of talked about it this week, like, no more light heavyweight. We've that ship has sailed, and it's going to be heavyweight from here on out. I mean, Moldavsky's a great fighter. You know, he's a Fedor team guy. That's why I talked about Fedor, because they were all there shooting the basketball at the Sun Stadium. What is that, Footprint Center?
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. Footprint Center. And so I look at this card. Yet you're in Arizona. You have two Arizona guys, co-main main event. But for Benson Henderson, like, why did they give him Islam Mamedov? He's going to lose that fight. Like, Mamedov's a minus 450 favorite, and his last fight was a split decision win over Brent Primus. You look at it for Benson Henderson, and yeah, his last three fights have been tough. Michael Chandler, Jason Jackson, Brent Primus. But, like, man, if he's going out, he's going out on his shield. Like, that's a tough run of four fights, and Mamedov's a good fighter. And, I mean, for Ryan Bader, like, I don't think he's going to beat Moldavsky. I mean, he might be able to out-wrestle him and finish him on the ground, but he's not going to be able to stand and trade with Moldavsky at heavyweight. So I think for Henderson, win or lose, if that's it. I think for Ryan Bader, maybe you see a little bit more because you can age a little bit more gracefully at heavyweight. But for Benson Henderson, I love Henderson, and I don't think he's going to get brutally knocked out in a fight with Mamedov, but I don't think he's going to win it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's a no-win situation. I mean, you know, Benson Henderson took this fight because he asked Scott Coker for the fastest route back to the title shot. Ryan Bader took this fight because it's a title fight. So, like, you know, I mean, if you win, you're either defending a title or, and I think unifying it, because the kid he's fighting is an interim if you're Bader, or you're back on track to getting back to, you know, Primus or whoever's next for that title shot, you know. Or the winner of that fight between Pitbull and Primus. So it's like, you know, it's hard even in your own building to walk out. And I say the Footprint Center is their building. It's going to be interesting because I think they came back so quickly to the Footprint Center because of how amazing the crowd was and the whole night was the last time we were here. But a lot went into that. Listen, I'm going to be there, but I'm not trying to put the jinx on it. I'm not telling people not to watch it. It's a good card. I just don't think it's going to be like the other one was. You know, the Anderson-Bader fight was big. Henderson was fighting a name. I just think it's going to be a different night. And I think that Henderson and Bader probably think that they're fighting guys that they could win against, and that's going to make this night different than the last night. We'll see.
The best fight on the card's definitely, you know, and I know you're a big fan of him now, but Bader's teammate, Sullivan Cauley, taking on Big Tuna. Like, everybody loves Big Tuna now. But we'll move on and talk about a guy that everybody loved at one point. I don't know how they feel about him anymore. But this is on a day, and I said it before, where Jeremy Stephens leaves UFC, would presumably sign with BKFC, but ends up with the PFL. And it's a missed opportunity that he could have had with BKFC in a fight against Melvin Gillard, only to find out that the Florida Athletic Commission blocked a possible fight between Melvin Gillard and Ulysses Diaz over a serious health concern. So, John, Gillard hasn't won a fight since 2014. He's winless in his last 14 fights. The question is, well, it's not if he should hang up the gloves or the hand wraps with BKFC, but should more commissions be more proactive, I guess you could say, going forward in a case like this?
That, you know, when I saw this, that's what really drew me to it as a segment. As a piece, a part of the rundown is this going to be, because over the years that we've done early stoppage, we always will see some of these topics and we're like, is this the beginning of something or is this just a one-off, right? This is an extreme case. I mean, listen, Florida, the thing that surprised me the most about it was Florida, because Florida just as a state is so ridiculous that I would just imagine, you know, they're first ones to like not worry about masks, and Florida is a clusterfuck in a lot of ways. But so it surprised me that it was the Florida Commission. But I mean, listen, the guy hasn't won a fight in 14. So if he's not a guy you want to step in on and say, hey, my friend, maybe we shouldn't be sanctioning you to fight. I mean, who is more deserving of a commission stepping in than Melvin Gillard? Not many. Now, does that mean that this is going to happen a lot more? I don't think we're going to see a lot of guys in Melvin Gillard's position. So I think that he was just such an extenuating circumstance that they were like, we got to stop this But I don't think this is the beginning of anything, no.
I mean, I look at this one and I really kind of had to think back. And in 2020, the end of the year, Curtis Millender was supposed to fight Joe Schilling. But canceled prior to event, Schilling denied fight license. And then Bellator cut him after that. Like, we've seen stuff like this happen. And I mean, for Joe Schilling, like, you look at his record, I mean, 4-6 in MMA. He's a great kickboxer. He got knocked out by Tony Johnson in a fight that he probably wasn't necessarily supposed to lose. He was a +135 underdog, but it's Joe Schilling, right? Like, he's a big enough name. So we've seen stuff like this happen before, but, and they use it in a lot of the articles. I've got one up. It's MMA Junkie. And you kind of go down through here and it says, where is it? Right here. Now, again, it's a statement, but at the very end, but even if cleared that Gallard had lost the past 4 BKB bouts and had lost 9 mixed martial arts events in a row, his last fight was at an unsanctioned event in the state of Montana, which does not have an operating commission. ABC also commended Florida for its regulatory decision and once again cited its concern for the sport of bare knuckle boxing, in quotation marks, recycling older boxers and mixed martial artists. That's the biggest key to this, right? Because we've seen it in a lot of these fights. It's what's your talent pool for bare knuckle boxing in North America? It's not like it is over in England or the United Kingdom by extension. It's not people that have actually trained this. It's not people that want to kind of live the life, so to speak. It's washed up boxers, washed up MMA fighters, people didn't have enough talent to make it. That really is it. Now, Diaz, that would have fought Melvin Gallard, that guy's a buzzsaw. He would have knocked him out cold. He is a special talent, and I love watching him fight, whether it's boxing or bare knuckle. He is very, very special. But by and large, a lot of people in bare knuckle just couldn't hack it in the other sports. So, and that's not to be incredibly disrespectful, though it might sound that way. It's a way to make a living, and I have to respect right. that. But there's times when you have to step in, you know, and somebody's got to get out of their own way. And Melvin Gallard's one of those guys, man. Like, he's had issues outside of the cage or the ring, and I don't want to see him, you know, lose another fight by knockout, still get paid, but then have more issues down the line.
It's tricky because you're telling, you know, tough guys how to best protect themselves. And these are guys that have always protected themselves by themselves. And they haven't needed anybody else to sort of step in and let them know, hey, you know, and there's certain guys that we feel like we can just watch fight in perpetuity. Because I've never, there's certain guys, you know, Shogun and Hendo towards the end started to get a little bit messy, but like for a long time, I was like, man, Shogun and Henderson can defend themselves, leave them alone. I don't care how old they are. When they're in there, they are dynamite waiting to explode. So just let them do what they got to do. But, you know, you're starting to – listen, let's not get into a whole conversation about telling people what to do with their bodies. But I just think that it gets weird, right, doesn't it? Of like, to what extent should you intervene?
Yeah, I mean, that's it. Like, I mean, consider this. I'm the skinniest, palest white guy you've ever seen wearing a Montreal Canadiens jersey and a turtleneck on the internet. So take what I say, you know, and do with it what you will. But yeah, it really is a tricky one. You hate to see somebody get hurt even more. But at the same time, you hate to see them lose their sole purpose of income, I'm assuming, other than sponsorships. So it really is a tricky one.
All right, Craig, we move on. Before we get to sparring sessions, I have a question for you. And I think I've asked this before. I don't remember the answer, so I'll just ask it again. If we had a producer, we have a producer. Let's just say if we had a producer and we could pick their name. What would you want our producer's name to be so that if we referenced him while we were on the air, it's like we're saying, like, you know, like New York Rick or Paulie Pabst on Dan Patrick, or like some of these guys, you know, Gary Delabate on Howard Stern. What would you want our producer's name to be?
I mean, geez, you really put me on the spot. You've already got one in mind, I'm sure.
I don't. Think about it. We'll go on to sparring sessions.
Fair enough. All right.
Here's why. Because whenever we're going to do like a social breakout video, I'm going to tell the producer, whatever we name him, to, you know, get it ready. All right, we move on to sparring sessions. Craig, this week, it's a simple question. It's all over the MMA internet. It's all over Twitter, and everybody is got one question on their mind. Should we do Figgy versus Moreno 4? And I will ask a follow-up question after you answer this. If yes, should it be both of their next fight?
Who are these people that are opposed to this? Where are they?
I just think some people feel like we did it, it's done, and you know, that's that.
No, I mean, come at me, bro. Like, you look at the division, and I, there's times where it's like, do we really have to do this again? Like Thompson Woodley, we saw it once. Do we really need it again? I understand what happened in the fight, but do we really need it again? But a fourth fight between Figueiredo and Moreno, everybody's up to speed at this point. First fight, Figueiredo won it, but he kicked Brandon Moreno below the belt and he lost the point. So ultimately, it's a draw. Second fight, Moreno gets the finish. Third fight, really, really close. 48-47s for Figueiredo, but the rounds were different by the judges scoring. So you can make an argument either way. I had Figueiredo winning if you tune into the Fight Companion. I still have him winning today, even though I haven't watched it 49 times. But when I look at it, yeah, I am totally invested in a fourth fight. I'd love to see it. I mentioned Mexico City earlier. I don't care where the fight is. I'd love to see it. It sucks if you're Askar Askarov, Kai Kara France, Alessandro Pantoja. It sucks for those upper echelon contenders that have been fighting tough guys and winning their fights that they don't get an opportunity at the belt. But this is one of those things where, again, what was it? 3.5 years ago, flyweight was on the way out. They were cutting people left, right, and center. And think about the guys they cut. I mean, Ray Borg made it out for a while. He's with Eagle. Jared Brooks is making some noise in Southeastern Asia. Like some of those, like Shorty Torres is still winning fights. So some of the guys that they've let go, I guess Borg doesn't count, but the other two do, and they fought each other. They're still making noise. Flyweight right now is in such a good spot where Demetrius Johnson couldn't draw numbers with the UFC. But Figueiredo Moreno seem to be having an impact right now, and people are talking about them. I say you continue to milk it for what it's worth.
Yeah, you know, Figueiredo and Moreno is in a weird place, or let me not say weird, is in a unique place in history, which is if these guys fought 100 times, you get 100 great fights, right? Henderson and Shogun, we talked about earlier, if they fight 100 times, you get 100 great fights. So I think that's the thing. But the question becomes, if we believe that Figueiredo is a little bit better, just a little bit, do we risk ruining what Brandon Moreno could be? Because I see a star in Brandon Moreno. I don't really see a star in Davidson Figueiredo. I see a guy trying to be a star, but I see Brandon Moreno as a because one of the things they say about when what makes someone a star or what makes someone popular is authenticity, or at least the ability to fake authenticity or believe or make you believe they're authentic, right? That's what makes somebody cool, how authentic you believe they are. I see a lot of authenticity with Brandon Moreno, just who he is, like GSP. GSP was authentic, and even though he didn't have all the bells and whistles of other fighters, he still was a tremendous star because of his authenticity. I see a lot of GSP and Brandon Moreno. I see a lot of like old school Mexican boxer, and I see Eric Morales and Marco Antonio Barrera and a little De La Hoya. I see Henry Cejudo in him. I see him, all of these great fighters of that ethnicity, of that background in Brandon Moreno. I see a huge star in this kid. Does fighting Figueiredo a fourth time damage that? And I guess really what you have to say to that is if he can't lose to Figueiredo and still be a star, then he wasn't a star to begin with.
My big question is, in a room with Henry Cejudo, Eric Albarracin, Walid Ismail, and Davidson Figueiredo, what do you think the vibe is in that room?
It's a cringy one. It's a cringy room.
I don't think I'm not on that wavelength.
Let me tell you something. Here's the funny part about that. There's a bar in Scottsdale called what is it? Margaritas, Two Margaritas, something. It's where all the after parties are. The after party for this fight coming up, Sullivan Cawley and Henry Corrales' after party is at this bar, right? And I think the owner knows the fight rated guys. I'm sure all those guys are going to be in that room. So I wanted to go. The after party starts at 9. I'm like, how do I get from Phoenix to? Doesn't matter. If I end up going to that after party, I'll let you know how cringy it is. But I would imagine those guys will all be there.
Instagram Live. That would be the perfect one for that.
There you go. So, yeah. So, I mean, it's a no-brainer for you. You think that they should do it?
Yeah, I think it's the way to go. I mean, cash in while it's still hot. I think there's too much uncertainty if you have Brandon Moreno, the loser, fight somebody else. I think Deiveson Figueiredo, you know, he can wait. He's the champ. Champs wait. But I think if you make Brandon Moreno fight somebody else, generational talent, a lot of fun. But if you have him fight Pantoja, you have him fight Askarov, there's always going to be, you know, the kind of nervousness in the back of your head of, well, if he loses, then we just blew it. So, because Figueiredo's not getting any younger.
Yeah, I agree. We move on, Craig, to the featured segment. So, listen, someday when my son is hosting this show with you, and I'm not long gone, but I'm in the rocking chair, this will probably be a part of our social content, but today it's a featured segment. I swear that I had an epiphany today with this featured segment. I think I've had this epiphany before. I think we've done this segment before. It seems awfully familiar. I thought I was really proud of myself when I came up with it, but I think we've done it before. So, two names for this one. Either snitches get stitches, because this is a TikTok video I found that I'm going to take this and stitch with it, or TikTok, you don't stop. I like the second title better. We'll figure it out. Here's what it is. The video I saw was Conor McGregor prime versus the prime of, it looks like, about 8 fighters. So I'm going to run it down. We'll call it TikTok, you don't stop for now. Craig, here we go. Conor McGregor, his prime versus the prime of RDA. Who you got?
McGregor.
Michael Chandler, who you got?
McGregor.
Justin Gaethje, who you got?
Gaethje.
Tony Ferguson, who you got?
Ferguson.
Alexander Volkanovski, who you got?
Oh, that's a tie. 45, Volkanovski.
Chucky Olives, who you got?
McGregor.
Max Holloway, who you got?
McGregor.
Dustin Poirier, who you got?
McGregor.
Islam Makhachev, who you got?
Oh, Islam all the way. Future champ.
Khabib Nurmagomedov, who you got? Conor's best night, Khabib's best night. Who wins?
Khabib, still. And still.
There you have it, TikTok. You don't stop. See you on TikTok, folks. Craig, we move on to the rest of our social content. Let's start with For the Gram. Kamaru Usman said this week he considered fighting Jan Blachowicz. What? Jan Blachowicz at 85? No, at 205. He was going to skip right over Israel Adesanya, their friends, and fight Jan Blachowicz at 205. Your thoughts?
I think they call that BDE. Isn't that what they say?
That's exactly what they say.
Like, I mean, I don't understand that fight at all. That doesn't make any sense. I mean, what is it? The confidence of the fight? No, because it would have been Blachowicz's champ. Like, it wouldn't have been, oh, Glover gets him submitted on the ground, whatever. Like,
there's no reason to fight him if he's not the champ, right?
Yeah, I feel like that's a hype piece if there ever was one. I mean, obviously, it led to the tweet that was mentioned at the start of the show. But, for the Gram, we can make that an Instagram story. I think it's all smoke.
You know, it might be cap, as the kids say, but I will say this. I think that Kamaru Usman is taller than you think he is, or you would believe he is. Jan Blachowicz, I think, is shorter than you would think he is. And when you look at Usman's frame, he could put some more meat on those bones, right? He's a super fit guy. In a world where BJ Penn fought at heavyweight, not looking great, by the way, I don't love it, but why not? All right, Craig, we move on to start the conversation. I have an interesting one this week. I'm sure we've asked before. Let's ask it again. We see the Khabib stuff, and we see some of the other times when Dana's getting a little chippy with fighters. And, you know, I guess we kind of chalk it up to, like, he's being a promoter. And that's what promoters do, and that's their job, and I get all that. Do you think Dana White gets along with fighters more or less than we publicly perceive?
My only question to this is, how much time in the day is there really for, like, let's say you're a 10-10 fighter, and you just walk into Dana White's office. Like, that's not going to happen. So let's say there's an event. It's in Vegas. You're there Friday at the weigh-ins. Dana goes sometimes when they face them off, but not really. When is a smaller fighter going to have the opportunity to talk to Dana White? Not very often. I kind of think of it this way, and this is kind of why I wore the hockey jersey tonight. Think about it if you're a player in another major sport. Let's say you play in the NHL, you're fourth liner, you're making league minimum, you're having a decent season. You're not going up and talking to the general manager. You're barely even talking to your coach. You might have a couple words with your assistant coach. You follow the rules, you let your agent do any of the talking, and if you end up disgruntled or it's not a good fit, your agent's going to try and broker a deal with your general manager, who's then going to talk to other general managers. It's different between the two sports. I just don't see a lot of fighters actually having much of a relationship with the promoter. I really don't. So for me, I'm assuming that everybody's like baseline, and there's a few on the shit list, and there's a few on the good list, but I don't really think that, you know, behind closed doors, there's much of a relationship for many. But with a guy like Francis Ngannou, maybe? Maybe. But I don't think that one's a good one.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that Dana knows the value of things being contentious between him and fighters. I think that, you know, if the one thing that Vince McMahon taught us and other people have taught us is if you can't find a rival for your star, you be the rival to your star. You know, the old Stone Cold Steve Austin, everybody wants to kick the shit out of their boss kind of a thing. So I think sometimes Dana feeds into that so that everybody seems disgruntled and they're pulling for Kamaru Usman or they're pulling for Francis Ngannou, whereas maybe they wouldn't have before. If you don't know who the hell Ciryl Gane is and you're a casual, you maybe get more attached to Francis Ngannou's contract situation than the guy he's fighting. And maybe that's another way to bring people to the party. I don't know. I think that I am of the belief that Dana is going to do whatever he can to get every single little buy that he can and manipulate the situation the way he can. So yeah, I agree with you. He doesn't have time for the lesser fighters, but I guess my question is like, do you think that he's okay with a guy like Khabib using him and these little veiled threats of like, if you're not happy with the UFC, come over here. Like he understands that that's like that him and Khabib are just doing commerce, right? Like Khabib gets his name on the websites. Dana's on the websites. He responds, and it all comes down to every day Dana White is on MMA Junkie or MMA Fighting, either responding to something, and that helps the overall thing. You think Dana's but like
never okay bloody with elbow.
Some of that? What's that?
Never bloody elbow. I think he's fine with it. I mean, and I think it's a push and pull like that. The other good thing about it too, if you're Dana White, it's competition. It's kind of healthy competition, and if Khabib does well, works for his own legacy, kind of props him up with the UFC too, right?
I agree.
You never know.
All right, Craig, let's move on to finish strong. I got a couple here. Robert Whittaker came out and said, no one believes that I can believe Israel Adesanya. Do you believe that Robert Whittaker believes that no one believes that he can beat Israel Adesanya?
I think he can beat Adesanya.
I think he beat Adesanya too. Our man Chael has been vindicated, exonerated, yeah. Hashtag free Chael didn't last long. All charges are dismissed.
Your thoughts? Congrats.
We'll go with congrats. Demetrius Johnson is lending his expertise to a new metaverse project. At the end of the day, will DJ be known more for the metaverse or the octagon?
The octagon, and I am sick of the metaverse. So sick.
Craig, Pillow Fighting Championships is real, and it's happening this weekend. Your thoughts?
Is it going to be on Cam Soda?
It should be.
Because I like Fight Circus, and it's on Cam Soda.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, man, Fight Circus, you want to get me amped up? It's a John Nutt promotion. They get it. They get it.
And lastly, Patty Pimblett. Patty the Batty. Has been booked. Kazula Vargas, UFC London, your thoughts?
Yeah, that's one to pad the resume. That's what that is. I actually have one. I want to leave MMA fans with this one because it was something that I touched on in the UFC 270 buildup. And there were, what, 8 debuting fighters on that card. We talk about fighter pay. We talk about this. We talk about that. And I made a couple of jokes where it was on looking for a fight the last episode, which is very recent. Joseph Holmes gets signed to the UFC. There's a main event. A couple of guys with some, you know, extensive pro records on the U.S. regional scene, and Dana kind of does the old, you know, we don't really sign prospects over 30. And if you look at UFC 270, a lot of the prospects they signed were over 30. There's a fight coming up in the UFC, and it's a while from now. It's end of February. Dariush Makhachev is your main event. Josiane Nunez, she was a super unknown. She came in and fought Bea Malecki, knocked her out. Great. Josiane Nunez's next opponent is 13-5, Jennifer Gonzalez Araneda, who's 13-5. She will be 35 years old, 11 months and 4 days when she makes her UFC debut. And her pro record at 13-5, of her last wins, she beat on 0-3, 1-0, 1-0, 4-1, 0-0, 2-0, and 0-0. What are we doing for signing talent here? There's better Bellator prelim fighters than the fighters the UFC signing right now. It is bad. So good job for Jennifer to get the opportunity in the UFC. But the level of talent that is making its way into the biggest promotion is bad. It's bad.
Shots fired. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FMP. I can be followed at SM Cornerman. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Craig, say something. You just said something shitty. Now say something witty.
Et c'est le but, Plekanec.
And there you have it. Peace.